Chapter 26. The moment I wake, I dash off a letter to the headmistress of St. Victoria's School for Girls, asking when Miss McCleavy was in their employ. I have Emily post it before the ink is completely dry. As it is Thursday, Miss Moore takes us to the gallery as promised. We travel by omnibus through the London streets. It is glorious to sit at the top, the bracing wind in our faces, peering down at the people milling about on the streets and at the horses pulling carts filled with wares. It is less than a week until Christmas, and the weather has turned much colder. Overhead, the clouds are heavy with the coming snow. Their white underbellies sit on the chimney tops, swallowing them whole before moving on to the next and the next, resting each time as if they have such a long way to go.
"Our stop is nigh, ladies,"
Miss Moore calls out over the street noise. The wind has picked up so that she has to secure her hat with one hand. With careful steps, we descend the staircase that leads to the bottom of the omnibus, where a smartly uniformed conductor takes our hands and helps us into the street.
"Gracious me,"
Miss Moore says, adjusting her hair beneath her hat.
"I thought I should blow away entirely."
The gallery is housed in a former gentleman's club. Many people have come out today. We move from floor to floor in their close company, taking in each exquisite painting. Miss Moore leads us down a hall devoted to the works of lesser-known artists. There are quiet portraits of pensive maidens, fiery scenes of war at sea, and pastoral landscapes that make me want to run barefoot through them. I find that I am drawn to a large painting in the corner. In it, an army of angels are joined in battle. Below them lies a lush garden and a lone tree, and a great number of people turned away, moaning. Below that is a vast wasteland of black rock bathed in a fiery orange glow. A golden city sits in the clouds far above. In the centre, two angels are locked in combat, arms entwined, till I cannot tell where one stops and the other begins. It is as if without this struggle to keep them aloft, they might both pitch into the void.
"Did you find something you like?"
Miss Moore asks, suddenly by my side. "I cannot say," I answer. "It's disturbing."
"Good art often is. What do you find disturbing about this painting?"
I take in the vibrant hues of the oils, the reds and oranges of the fire, the whites and pale greys of the angel's wings, the variations of the flesh tones that make muscles seem to come alive, straining for victory. It seems rather desperate, as if there's too much at stake. Miss Moore leans forward to read the brass plate beneath the painting.
"Artist unknown, circa 1801. A host of rebel angels."
She quotes what sounds like poetry.
"To reign is worth ambition, though in hell. Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. John Milton, Paradise Lost, Book 1. Have you ever read it?"
"No," I say, blushing.
"Miss Worthington? Miss Bradshaw?"
Miss Moore asks. They shake their heads.
"Gracious, what is to become of the Empire when we do not read our best English poets? John Milton, born 1608, died 1674. His epic poem, Paradise Lost, is the story of Lucifer."
She points to the dark-haired angel in the centre.
"Heaven's brightest and best-loved angel, who was cast out for inspiring a rebellion against God. Having lost heaven, Lucifer and his rebel angels vowed to continue fighting here on earth."
Anne blows her nose daintily into her handkerchief. "I don't understand why he had to fight. He was already in heaven."
"True, but he wasn't content to serve. He wanted more."
"He had all he could ask for, didn't he?" Anne asks.
"Exactly,"
Miss Moore states.
"He had to ask. He was dependent upon someone else's whim. It's a terrible thing to have no power of one's own, to be denied."
Felicity and Anne flash me a glance, and I feel a surge of guilt. I have the power, they do not. Do they hate me for it? "Poor Lucifer," Felicity murmurs. Miss Moore laughs.
"That is a most unusual thought, Miss Worthington. But you are in good company. Milton himself seemed to feel sympathy for him, as does this painter. Do you see how beautiful he's made the dark angel?"
The three of us peer through the brushstrokes at the angel's strong, perfect backs.
They seem almost as lovers, oblivious to the rest of us. It's the struggle that matters.
I wonder, Miss Moore muses.
Yes, Miss Moore, Anne prompts.
What if evil doesn't really exist? What if evil is something dreamed up by man, and there is nothing to struggle against except our own limitations, the constant battle between our will, our desires, and our choices?
But there is real evil, I say, thinking of Circe. Miss Moore gives me a curious look.
How do you know?
We've seen it, Anne blurts out. Felicity coughs and gives Anne an indelicate elbow to the ribs. Miss Moore leans in close.
You're quite right. Evil does exist.
My heart skips a beat. Is this it? Will she confess something to us here and now?
It is called finishing school.
She gives a mock shudder and we giggle. A grim grey couple passes at that moment, giving us a sharp glance of disapproval. Felicity stares at the painting as if she wants to touch it.
Do you think it's possible that some people aren't quite right in some way, that there is some evil in them that makes others...
She trails off. Makes others what? Anne asks.
Do things.
I don't know what she means. Miss Moore keeps her eyes on the painting.
We must each be accountable for our own actions, Miss Worthington, if that is what you're asking.
If that is indeed what Felicity wants to know, she doesn't let on. I cannot tell whether her question has been answered.